Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. The show is heard on WBCQ, The Planet, every Tuesday and Thursday evenings at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can also listen to it on Podomatic.com or our YouTube channel, Camp Constitution, and also on IPMNation.org, which is a 24-hour online show, a new service out of Concord, New Hampshire. And I think they show it at 8 o'clock. Well, they play at 8 o'clock in the morning on Eastern Standard Time on Saturdays. The show was brought to you by Camp Constitution, which, among other things, runs a week-long family camp. And this year's camp will take place where it took place last year at the Lakeside Christian Camp and Conference Center in beautiful Pittsfield, Massachusetts. That's pretty close to the New York border in western Massachusetts. And we have a great lineup of instructors, as we do every year. Visit our website to learn more, campconstitution.net. And if you like this show and would like to help keep it on the air, please consider a donation. You can do that through our PayPal account that you can find one right on our homepage or the website. We also encourage you to share the word. If you listen to this on Podomatic, please go to Podomatic and follow our page, and also share it on this incredible station, WBCQ. Now, today, in the United States, is Martin Luther King Day. And I've discussed this. The show is on a Monday, so I usually have a few things to say about it, and I won't spend the whole show on it, but it's very disturbing. I expect the left to celebrate one of their own. That's a given. But when people in the Christian conservative camp, patriotic Americans, when they have embraced this man's memory, I'm troubled. And I wish I were wrong about this. I wish that Martin Luther King, who was supposedly, he was an ordained minister, that's not supposedly, but a Baptist minister. And I love the Baptists. I have attended Baptist churches. I'm not a member of a Baptist church, but I feel comfortable in a Baptist church. But Martin Luther King was not your typical Baptist, Bible-believing Christian. And it doesn't take a whole lot of research to figure that out. It's not like this is some hidden information that nobody knows about, but people just don't want to do it. You're not going to, and let me just say, you're not going to score points with the left by appropriating his memory, folks. It's not going to happen. Yes, there was a lot of injustice against Black Americans, and there still is. I'm not saying that there wasn't a reason to speak out against the injustices, and there were lots of decent people that didn't have to encourage violence and didn't have angry demonstrations, all in order to get more federal government control over our lives. In fact, Martin Luther King spelled out his game plan in I think it was April 1966. I think it was Life magazine or local, one of those, and I can find the reference, where he said that their goal is to get people of conscience out in the streets, and then have the racists attack them and get this all on the video, on film, and then the people around the country will be indignant by what they see, and they will ask for more federal control, federal remediation, I think was the term he used. That's a very simple game plan, and they still use this type of game plan all the time, just manipulating people and what have you. But Martin Luther King, he had a very flawed character. Now, we're all sinners saved by the grace of God, but he was an habitual adulterer. And what makes it worse is that he was the first recipient of the Margaret Sanger Award. Now, I discussed Margaret Sanger in the past, but Margaret Sanger was the founder of Planned Parenthood. She was a racist. She was a eugenicist. She believed that certain races should be controlled. And in fact, in 1939, she wrote a letter to Dr. Clarence Gamble, and again, this is nothing new to listeners of the show, where she talked about her Negro project, where Black doctors and clergymen would promote birth control amongst Blacks, because in her mind, there were just too many Blacks. So Martin Luther King worked with people, not just the far left, but out-and-out communists. There's a picture of him at what was called the Highlander Folk School in Monteagle, Tennessee. Sitting right next to him was a top communist official, U.S. Communist Party, not a liberal, not a progressive freethinker, but an actual communist. And he had a man named Hunter Pitts Odell that worked for him, who was a communist, also a sex pervert, arrested a number of times and And Martin Luther King's file was sealed by a federal judge. I think it was in 1976 for 50 years. So it's going to be open to, because his supporters wanted it destroyed. But if he was this great saintly man as we're told he is, then why would you worry about what the FBI? The FBI, by the way, under J. Edgar Hoover, he operated. His boss was the Attorney General at that time. Mainly, it was Robert Kennedy. Robert Kennedy authorized the wiretapping because of his affiliations, and so you don't just wiretap people because you don't like the way they look or what they say, and it's an expensive procedure. You don't just wiretap somebody, and I'm not a big fan of wiretapping and surveillance, but there are enemies. There are people who have nothing but bad things in mind. So, in fact, J. Edgar Hoover did a great job in disemboweling the Ku Klux Klan in the South. That's something that the left won't admit. But anyway, and speaking of the left, I had some interesting events happened to me personally last week, and it's one way to kind of turn the tables. Now, living here in Boston, people who share my worldview are a small minority. Just to give you an idea that Donald Trump received still a substantial amount, about 37,000 votes, and Hillary Clinton, this is right in the city, about Hillary Clinton got about 220,000 votes. So we're like outnumbered 5-1. And by, I'm not trying to say that Donald Trump is a staunch constitutionalist, but I'll just give you a little idea of the break here in Boston. It wasn't always that way. I live in a neighborhood, and this is typical of probably a lot of neighborhoods and cities around the country. It's a neighborhood of West Roxbury, and I grew up in a nearby neighborhood of Hyde Park, where it was mainly middle class, middle class, not upper middle class, but middle class, blue collar, some professional people. And a lot of them were Democrats, but they were not the hardcore left-wing Democrats, the folks that now control the party. They would be the ones that would vote for Ronald Reagan. And we actually had a few city councilors that were Democrats, even though when you run for office in Boston, it's nonpartisan. But the Democrats, there were some really hardcore conservative Democrats, Jim Kelly, for example, and the late, both of them passed away, Dapper O'Neill. But the next generation, people at my age, or even the generation after me, their roots are from this area, but they have embraced, not all of them, but a disproportionate of them embrace far left politics. And well, you see all of these people in Boston with Irish surnames like Marty Walsh, the mayor, and Matt O'Malley, a city councilor. They are far leftist, pro-abortionist, just anything that's good. And normally they all embrace the militant homosexual agenda. They think there's 100 different genders. It's just insane. They fly communist flags on the flagpoles, but won't let Christians fly a flag. So it tells you that something's quite wrong. But I'm here because this is where God wants me to be. Or else I wouldn't be here. I'd be someplace else, preferably Aroostook County or Maine, or maybe even, which I love, by the way, or perhaps the southwest corner of New Hampshire, which is an area that I really love as well. But I'm here in behind enemy lines. I've been writing letters to the local newspapers. Now, I know that in our high-tech era, you can use social media, YouTube, Facebook, and dozens of others, and that's a great way to communicate the message. But the letter to the editor, the local hard copy paper, you can paste it on their Facebook page or what have you, but most communities have weekly papers. And while the daily papers, thankfully, are losing lots of their circulation, the miserable Boston Globe here, which is the largest paper in New England, had lost half of its circulation of the hard copy, and it was going under until the owner of the Boston Red Sox, John Henry, a pompous fraud that he is, bought it for $1 billion and kept it going. He should have let it die an undignified death. But anyway, but the weekly papers tend to be doing pretty well, and a lot of these papers are simply free. Pick it up, you pick it up at your local grocery, convenience store, grocery store, what have you, general store, if you're in a rural area. And the advertisements obviously pay for the, and don't have a big budget, so they like people writing letters to editors. They even like guest editorials and local people reporting on stories, and they'll run them. And you have a great one up in the Fort Fairfield Journal. I know the owner of that, owner and publisher, Bottle Washer. He's a great guy. I think WBCQ, they advertise. Anyway, this is still a great way to reach out to people. So and they tend to publish every letter I send them, and I do it about once a month. And in each letter, it will be topical. I usually respond to something that you, an article, and that's a better way to get your letter published, is to respond to an article that you've read in the paper, not just some general thing. Well, you can do that too. I mean, there's some general things that are going on in the world, and you can write one letter and send it out to 1,000 newspapers if you have the right emails. But the best way to do it, and I always like to, I use the expression an altar call. I always like to put information. For more information, please contact, get a hold of us at our website. Here's my phone number. Now, some people don't like to do that, and I can understand. They figure they're going to be harassed or what have you. Thankfully, I haven't really experienced too much of that, very little of that, especially if it's in your own neighborhood. So anyway, I wrote a letter on the plastic bag ban, and then making the connections why it's plastic bags are better, and then that it's really nothing more than the implementation of Agenda 21. And for more information, readers who like more information may contact me. Well, I got up to two newspapers. One of the newspapers, in Boston, it's called the City Paper. I actually know the owner. I think he's a conservative Democrat, and I wrote an article for him about several times. But he took my letter as an article and made it the lead story in the paper, which is pretty interesting. And then because of that, then I created a pamphlet. Camp Constitution had not a pamphlet, but with the help of Mark Affleck, our camp director. In fact, he's the one that really created the flyer. I just put the copy of it and made it really, some nice graphics, and made it really eye appealing. And it's a PDF, and if you go to our website, there's a drop-down section that says Downloads. Click on that, and it's the very last item where you can download it. It's 2 pages, one page, two sides. And I posted it on something called Nextdoor. Now, Nextdoor is social media. It's sort of geared a little bit like Facebook, but it's more if you have a certain zip code and you want to sell something, or you're looking to hire somebody, show me your walk. I'd get some stuff I'm throwing away. And I did notice that somebody posted something about solar energy or something to that effect, or some type of alternative energy, and going go green. So I thought, well, if they're going to use this format, I said, I guess I could post something. So I posted a link to the flyer. And, I said, the plastic bag ban does affect us. And hey, let's if you agree with me, take some action. Well, it brought out I call them the Committees for the Defense of the Revolution, CDR. And the CDR committees were actually in communist Cuba, where in a neighborhood or barrio, they would operate. And what they would do is they would report any suspicious activity to their to their local communist official, to local police, and suspicious activity as well. Somebody's coming back late to their little socialized apartment, or maybe there are too many visitors at their home. They might be having a meeting. They might be having a church service in their home. They might have a radio, listening to unauthorized broadcasts from overseas, or from other countries, or what have you. And they would get a little extra when they turn somebody in, a little extra ration for meat. And while we don't have anything quite like that, we do have, I call it, because they're sort of like that. They want to keep an eye on people recycling. We're going to drop a dime on you if we see it. You're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. So this one particular busybody leftist, name is Alan Wright. Don't know much about him, but over the years, he will rebut my letters and usually be sarcastic. And that's a Saul Alinsky tactic, by the way. But what's encouraging is that they seem to have a need to rebut my message. They want to silence me, not physically silence me, but they want to, don't pay attention to him. This is crazy, conspiracy theories. He's a John Bircher. He's this, he's that. And it's all of this is really fallacious reasoning. If I say, for example, the plastic bag ban is a result of Agenda 21, you could say, well, I disagree with that, but then I can back it up. But that's not what they want to do. They want to poison the well. It's a good tactic. Now, Alinsky, And I actually knew a man who was an undercover agent for the FBI that was assigned to when he was going after Kodak in Rochester, New York. They usually don't go after a beloved institution. They go after the CEO or some person that's affiliated with it. So, for example, let's say that the left want to go after the Red Sox. Well, they don't want to go after the Boston Red Sox. I mean, everybody loves the Boston. If you're in Boston, we'll go after the owner, you know. And, of course, they're not going to do that because he's a leftist. But let's say John Henry was a conservative giving money to Camp Constitution. So they would trash him. They wouldn't trash the Red Sox. They trashed. So that's how Alinsky, one of the things that he advocated. But the powerful tool, they think, is of ridicule and scorn. And not only that, but he got other people to weigh in. And it looked like they were all these people were sort of operating on their own. Oh, yes, I think the band is great. There's too many plastic is killing people, killing whales, and all this crazy stuff. And then it got a little nasty. Then it was when I wouldn't relent, I kept on putting up facts and countering their nasty accusations. Then it was, well, the Heartland Institute, you're quoting a source from the Heartland Institute, and they get money from the Koch brothers, and you can't, so therefore they have no validity. And Koch brothers are horrible. Oil, they make money from oil and all kinds of horrible things. And I rebutted this. I called the Heartland Institute. I went to their website, and I met the director, Joe Bast. There's some good people there. I don't agree with everything. They support an Article 5 convention, but they're pretty solid on everything else. And I think people of goodwill can have disagreements. Without, you know, resorting to name calling. But anyway, when it comes to the environmental issues, free market issues, they're spot on. Excellent. So they have on their website, they have a little, frequently asked questions. And they said, are we supported by the Koch brothers? And the response was, in 2012, they received a $25,000 donation from the Koch brothers Foundation to fight Obamacare. And he said if that particular year, it was less than 1% of its overall operational budget. We have not received any money from them since. So yes, the Koch brothers did support them, but it had nothing to do with the climate issue, and it was a one-time donation, and it was a considerably modest donation 8 years ago, six years ago, 7 years ago. But this guy relented, and even though I pointed this out. And then one of his fellow leftists got on there and said, oh, the Heartland Institute said that back in the 90s, they said cigarette smoking was not bad. It was good for you. And they worked with the tobacco lobby and so forth. So, okay, well, let's look into that. Let's see exactly what that. And the Heartland Institute came back and they said, no, we think tobacco does kill. We're not supporting it. And he said, but we don't believe in some of the accusations that secondhand smoke is as bad as it claims to be. And that was the result of why they banned restaurants all over the cities and towns and states, banned smoking in restaurants and public places. I personally benefit from that because I'm a non-smoker and I don't like walking into a smoky restaurant, what have you, or a bar, which I don't go into very often. But it's a freedom issue, and they simply point that out. You know, the city, the town officials, state officials have said, now you own this particular piece of property, and you can't smoke in here. You, the city has come in and tell you what you can do on your own in the privacy, but they say, well, since it's public accommodation. So it's always some connection in the city. And that's what it was about. It's a free market issue, a free freedom issue. It had nothing to do with it. And they said that we're not a pay-to-play, and there may have been some may have donated some tobacco company. It may have been a modest donation, but they don't get anything from they didn't do it because of the tobacco industry promoting them. It's simply a free market principle. So when you point out these facts, it doesn't matter. The narrative is you can't listen to anybody who, any organization that disagrees with us. Forget the facts. It's emotion, and we're going to ridicule people. But as they were it looked like they were attacking me. There were six or seven, a few more, you know, calling me nasty things and what have you. Here's myself. I go around picking up trash in my neighborhood. I'm very conscientious about that. And it's interesting how hypocritical these folks are. There was a broken bottle in front of the local post office. It was there for about 4 hours until I picked it up. And all of the people walking by with their reusable bags, all these greenies, not one of them had the initiative to pick up this. And it was only in two pieces, so it wasn't like shattered and hard to pick up. No one picked it up except for me. I'm the evil plastic bag front man, you know, the plastic bag lobbyist and what have you. So as they were attacking me, I got some calls from people, some emails saying, hey, keep it up. We want to help. What can we do? I don't like this band. And that really got this other site ticked off. So this busybody, Alan Wright, writes makes a post, and he calls it the Great Plastic Bag Debate. Well, there's not a debate. It's not a debate when you put up false information and then call everybody an extremist who disagrees with you or a conspiracy theorist or what have you. So I refuted his points, and so I was actually allowed to even put more things up. And as this was going on, I said, you know, this is kind of an interesting thing. This is a good way that freedom activists should – a good tactic that freedom activists should employ. And I got a hold of Professor Willie Soon, one of our instructors, become a good friend of mine. And Willie has a lot of friends in the climate realist community. And I asked him if he could give me some, you know, a little recognition here. Well, anyway, that led to an article, Paul Dreisen, and he got a hold of me, and he took my letter to the editor, and he tweaked it a little bit, did some editing, and turned it into an article, which has been posted on the Heartland Institute's website. What's Up With That? That was a website by Anthony Watt. That's W-A-T-T Watts, and W-A-T-T-S, What's Up With That? And a few others, Canada Free Press, and I got a call yesterday from a lady in California that wants to do a not only cover the story, run the article, but she's interested in a Camp Constitution in California, and a businessman who owns 6 restaurants in Boston. So these are just great ways to utilize. It's almost like a judo expert, you know, that you use the weight of your opponent to your advantage. We can't outspend the left, and in Boston, we don't outnumber them. But we still have some means to get the word out. And there are some well-intentioned people that might hear this and reconsider. In fact, the man who owned this newspaper in the Boston City paper, he said, I've never saw these facts presented to me. And he said, yeah, I'm going to run the story. I don't know if he disagrees with the band, but he's an honest guy. And he said, hey, well, this is the other side. I'll put it out there. And it was interesting, too. This is feel-good attitude. The late Dixie Lee Ray, I think she was a nuclear scientist. She was governor of Washington State, I believe. Yeah, Washington State, I think in the 70s. She was speaking at an Eagle Forum event back probably late 80s, early 90s, talking about recycling. And she said, what are bottles made out of? And she said, they're made out of glass. She said, are we running out of sand? She said, are we running out of sand? She says, no, but it makes us feel warm and fuzzy when we do that. And it's one thing banning plastic bags were, as much as I would oppose it, so, well, it's going to help the environment. At least, okay, I have to deal with this nonsense, but there's some positive come out of it. But there isn't any at all. The bags that we use and bought here aren't the problem in the Pacific Ocean. The Pacific Ocean is loaded with plastics coming from Asian nations, and they're not plastic bags. But what they do is they'll take a picture of a whale. Oh, look what they found in this whale. They found this and they found that. Yeah, the whale in Indonesia, not the whale in Boston Harbor or Casco Bay or Biscayne Bay. It's a whale in the where all the problems are happening. And it's also another issue, too. It's illegal to litter. If I'm littering in a plastic bag, getting in trees and getting here and there, fine me. I think it's legitimate, you know, public property, and I don't have a problem with. I don't think anyone has any problem with laws against littering or dumping. So just enforce the laws. Don't punish everybody, and force businesses to sell bags. That's how outrageous this is. In Boston, it's not just a question of banning plastic bag, which is an incredibly effective free market product. It's actually invented by a guy in Sweden, even in socialist, you can get a couple of the 1950s, and they were able to, you know, the thing is so lightweight, it can hold something like 1,000 times its weight. The average plastic shopping bag holds 16 pounds, and there's dozens of uses for it. And, to recycle, 100% recyclable, with a reusable bag, and these people actually think that by using these reusable bags made in foreign countries by slave labor, right over here on huge ships burning fossil fuel, and then putting them on trucks and trains, shipping them around the country to get into the stores where people will buy them. And they think somehow clutching their little bag is going to somehow save a whale somewhere in the Pacific Ocean. They believe that. Some of these people are very intelligent, too. These people can speak several languages, and they have degrees and all kinds of college degrees, but they can't realize just how stupid and foolish they look. And I'm of the opinion that the leadership of these green organizations, people like Al Gore, the head of Greenpeace, which is one of the worst, the big foundation directors, they must laugh themselves silly over the stupidity or the gullibility, not stupidity, but the gullibility of the average American, clutching their little bags, running around in their little so-called smart cars that, get a pretty good gas mileage, but if you bump into a trash can, you'll total your car, dangerous little things. Or if you can afford them, the battery-powered cars, that are terribly expensive and totally inefficient, and not so green either. And that's the thing. This green energy isn't green; it's anti-green. These wind turbines, Mars Hill, up in Maine, not too far from where this radio show is broadcast. It's one of the most poorest towns. You go through Mars Hill, it's clean, but half the buildings are abandoned or closed down. The storefronts, there's just a few storefronts that are open, half a dozen, maybe more, but not much more. Meanwhile, on the hills, you get this gigantic, these turbines. Well, how do you make these turbines? What do they make them out of? They make them out of recycled, reusable bags? No, they have to use rare, minerals. They have to use metals. They have to mine the metals. And the ores, they have to use tons and tons of concrete so they can set these gigantic turbines so they won't fall down. And, so they have to build them to withstand certain winds and all kinds of. Then when they build them, they got to clear cut. They got to take a lot of, they kind of cut a lot of trees. So they have to clear cut. And then they have to put transmission lines so they do more clear cutting. And then they, if it's windy, if it's too windy, they'll shut down. If it's not windy, they don't work at all. So you have to have backup. You have to have gas turbines to back up. Because when the grid says we need energy, they can't, we have to wait till the wind blows. They have to supply the energy. So they're very costly, and they do break. They catch fire. Forget it. It's going to repair one of those things. The average one, well, there's different sizes, but it's, a couple of $1 million. And that's just for one, and how long it takes to generate $2 million worth of energy? By the time it's paid for itself, you're going to replace it. And many times they break before you can replace them. And so they're not really, again, if you get a turbine on your property, you paid for it with your own money, not subsidized by the taxpayer, that's great. Good for you. And they also make people sick when if there's turbines that are in some communities where they're close to where people live. I guess they emit this low frequency and make people dizzy, and then you have the strobe effect if you're looking, seeing this continuous turning, and so there's all kinds of negative things about it. And this notion that we're somehow going to be carbon neutral by 2050, you talk about ridiculous. We're going to build a carbon neutral building. That's the goal. The only way to do that is to build mud huts. You're not going to have carbon neutral. It's impossible. So, anyway, I think I've reached my time. Sometimes I lose track of my time here, but I want to thank you, and I want to encourage you to step out there and if you're not already, become a freedom activist. And if you are a freedom activist, try to be a little more effective. I think we have great opportunities in front of us. People are just starving for information, looking for the right kind of leadership too. So with that, I want to thank you for listening. You've been listening to Camp Constant Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. And until next week, may God bless you.